Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BC Association of School Psychologists podcast. We are excited to bring you helpful ideas for your practice, supported by experts and research. This episode is hosted by school psychologists Kathleen Cherry and myself, James Tan Liao, and features an informative discussion with Dr. Liz Angoff. Dr. Liz is a licensed educational psychologist with a diplomate in school neuropsychology. She is the author of the brain-building books, Tools to Engage Children in Understanding Their Learning and Developmental Differences as Part of the Assessment Process. We would first like to acknowledge and honor the traditional unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Coast Salish, Tsuut'ina Nation, Esquimalt, and Songhees peoples where we live, work, play, and learn. All right, Dr. Liz, we so appreciate your time. Thank you for being here with us today. We are so excited to have a chat with you about all the work you've been doing.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
What is one important piece of information that you'd like to highlight for our listeners to take away from this discussion?
I think the biggest take home from the work that I've been doing is that we have not as a practice, as a field, been talking to kids directly about their brains, about why we do testing, about what we learned. We spend so much time thinking about presenting this information to schools, to teachers, to parents, but it's been left out of the conversation how we talk to kids. And the reason it's important is because we're learning, and I think your audience knows, kids know something is different, but they don't know why. And when they don't know why, they start to create their own narratives about what's going on. And unfortunately, these narratives tend to be negative and harmful, and they carry them with them for a very long time. And so through the assessment process, through our work with kids in schools, we have an opportunity to shift these narratives. And we can do that by being really transparent about our assessment process and bringing kids along the way. Bringing kids with us along the way so that they really start to understand and discover and have those aha moments with us about their brains and what makes them unique.
Love that. So very empowering.
Thanks, Dr. Liz. I love when you said bringing kids along the way, because really the assessment is very much their story. And this is part of the journey that we all undertake together in getting to know how they learn. Dr. Liz, we were wondering, now that we've kind of gotten our listeners a little bit more intrigued, we'd love to hear about your story, your background, and what's led you to where you are today with educational psychology.
Of course. So I actually started as a teacher, and I was an awful teacher. It is the hardest job that I have ever had. For me, harder than being a parent, harder than any clerical job. It was so, so hard. But I loved circle time. I loved community, you know, community circle and talking about the challenges kids were facing and problem solving with them. And I thought I would like to do two things with my life. One, I would like to have community circle all day long with kids. And the other is that teachers need help. They need support. Parents need support. And I want to be the person who is making all of these connections between home and school and child, because as a teacher, I felt so unsupported by the system. So that's really what drove me into educational psychology, because I wanted to be part of that support system. And I was with a large public school district here in California for 13 years. And then about 10 years ago, I transitioned to private practice. And so now I get to work with families in a different way and still collaborate with schools and kind of have my paws in all kinds of different pieces of a child's life and their network. And again, even a broader reach of trying to connect all those dots to make sure everybody's on the same page and communicating. not just about the kid, but with the child.
I love that, and very, very key, that connection piece between with the child and so many other players that are involved often in working with our students, and that is incredibly key. I know you have written two books, the Brain Building book and Brain Building 101. Can you describe some key aspects of this work and how it connects with all of that you were mentioning?
Yeah, so I'll take a just kind of a half step back to say that these books, they came from like a challenge that I came across when I went into private practice. So working in the school district, you know, we were, I was, you know, doing the assessments and doing a lot of other work. But in retrospect, it was very interesting that it was never part of our practice to talk to kids about what we had done. And there were a couple unique circumstances where I did talk to kids directly. And I just remember those being so empowering, just a child who had Tourette syndrome, a child with a heart condition, and realizing, oh, like, this is affecting my learning and it's not my fault. And it's actually part of what makes me unique. And it's part of my story, like you said, James. It was so empowering, but it was definitely an anomaly. And then I went into private practice in my very first case where I really had time to sit down with the parents and explain what was going on. They just happened to say, you know what? We think it would be so empowering for our child to hear this story. So we brought the child in who is a middle schooler. And I did all the things. I had a metaphor. I was going to pull up Google Maps to kind of show, like this is kind of like traffic, a learning disability is like traffic in your brain. And I had pulled the metaphor from, you know, online, and I was going to do, you know, like I had a visual and I had the metaphor and we sat him down and I was like, guess what? We learned you have a learning disability. Let me pull up my visual. And he just collapsed. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, you know, put his head down. He's crying, ran out of the office. And unfortunately, I've never seen him again. And his parents were like, oh, it's just the wrong time, or we didn't prepare him. And it's just, I was just left with this feeling of, this one's on me. Like, something went wrong and I don't know what it is. And so I started talking to colleagues, like, how do you talk to kids about what we did? How do you explain this? And it turned out nobody knew. And they all felt like it was just a roll of the dice. Maybe a kid's ready, maybe they're not. I just wait till kids are older. I mean, it was just like, wow, we don't do this. And so I started, because this is the way my brain works. If this is really hard, let me like dive even deeper in and do all of this. And so I started really experimenting with different ways to talk to kids. And sometimes it went really well and sometimes it didn't. And I was curious about what was happening. And I started to realize that one of the things that went wrong with that initial session is that it was a big surprise. Like during the testing, the kid and I had a great relationship. I was like, we're going to play all these different games. And I made it fun and he got prizes. But then when he came in, it was kind of like a bait and switch. It was like, wait a minute, we were doing something serious. I wasn't expecting that. There must be something really wrong with me. You're not telling me, like, you didn't tell me something. So I started pulling this kind of explaining the, the results to kids back further and further into my assessment sessions and starting to talk to them about what we were learning about their strengths, starting to talk to them about like, hey, you know, like this looks really hard for you. I wonder if we can figure out why. And I realized that because it's such a sensitive conversation, I needed a script. I needed to really get like hone in on what is the process so I can be really, transparent with kids about this. And the brain building books are the script that I developed for myself that was working as a very intentional and, kind of operationalized way to bring kids through the assessment process with me. And the books are outlined so that the first page is, let's introduce the testing process in a way that helps, that demystifies it for kids. We're here to learn about your brain. We're here to find out what your highways are, where those connections are going super fast. We're here to find out what's under construction, because everybody's brain is under construction. And for you, there might be some construction projects that are pretty sticky. And that's amazing when we find them. I'm so excited when we find them, because together we're going to figure out what to do. And here's the page where we're going to write down all our tools that are going to help us build your brain. So the brain building books, they are workbooks that you fill out with the child during the assessment process. And this script is bringing you through, so you have all of the building blocks to actually talk to the child about what we learned at the end. And it's not a surprise. And they've already figured out a lot of the things. We're just bringing it together at the end. And then we're sending it home with parents. And it's a physical book that can lay out on the coffee table. They can bring to so many kids, bring it to relatives, bring it to their teachers. And now they have a tool for self-advocacy. So so that's where the books came from, is just this way of helping me make sure that I was being very methodical and intentional about how I was communicating to kids.
I think that's a great story, Dr. Liz. I think there's so many points there that really resonated with me, like this tool to really help bring the student along in their story, in their journey, that goes from the start so that, you know, on the one hand, you're demystifying the assessment process, right? And then on the other hand, you're kind of telling them, hey, here's where we're actually going with this. We're going to get sort of your highways, and we're going to get your construction zones, and we're going to better understand the tools as well. And so at the end of the day, like, that's why we're doing this, right? And that just makes me think about this one student who I worked with before learning about your brain building book. And this was like a year and a half ago, where we were talking about his results. He was in high school, and he, as soon as I mentioned the word disability, he was just like, you could see his body language changed from like engaged to like just withdrawn to like, oh, is this really what we were doing? And it is such a different way, right? In some ways, it kind of creates that rift in the rapport. And I think, Dr. Liz, on that point, you mentioned that with In the past, you've used the word disability. That didn't quite go well. Are those terms, disability, disorder, are those still terms that come up as you are having these discussions with the students and sometimes their families as well?
Yeah, I love this question, because I've learned that it really depends on the student and where they are in their journey. But I'll throw out a couple things that are in my mind when I'm introducing the official terms to kids. The first is that we're always starting with this construction metaphor of your brain has highways and construction projects. So by the time we get to any kind of official terms or diagnosis or eligibility criteria, we've already talked about everything we need to talk about. This is your profile, and these are things under construction. And I start the conversation about the official terms with, it turns out you're not alone. In fact, this profile has a name. And so it's all couched in, you know, like, you are not alone. Like, other people have brains that are really similar to yours. They've walked this path before, and it's great because we know how to help you. Right? We know how to do this construction, even though you've been trying to do it on your own. It's so hard. And it's hard for a reason. And so we got a team, we got a construction crew that's going to help you. A lot of times when I'm introducing something like we call this a learning disability, which is the term that we use to signify that you need help with these construction projects. But the term learning disability, it doesn't actually, encapsulate, it doesn't take into account all of the pieces that we talked about, because having a dyslexic brain is not only about the parts that are hard for you, it's also about these really unique ways that you make connections and see the bigger picture. And so, but you might see the term, I do this a lot, you might see this term used, or you might hear this, because we, I love throwing like history under the bus for kids. Like they didn't really know what they were talking about. Like they didn't know all the stuff that we know now. And so they came up with this term learning disability when it's really about a difference that can be really difficult in certain situations. And the way that our school system is constructed means that it's not always, you're not always being taught in a way that works for your brain. So that can be disabling, meaning that it makes it harder for you to learn in the same ways, or makes it harder for you to get to the same goals. That's not your fault. We just learn that you learn in a different way. So we're going to do things differently so you don't feel so disabled, or you don't feel so put off. So there's what I'm referring to is the social model of disability. The idea that the things that disable us are because the way that we operate the best does not jive with the way that society is built or the way that most people are operating. And so it's really a two-way street of communication. And when we change the environment to be a better fit for you, you're not going to feel so impacted. You're not going to feel like you're up against so many obstacles. So I think that when, you know, for kids who are very young, we might not even kind of go there. But as kids get older, I think, you know, part of this like demystifying, like what this is, they're going to see things like, especially like ADHD at some point, you know, any 8-year-old is going to hear like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and want to know what that is. And so I immediately, I'm like, okay, listen, this is called ADHD. And it stands for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which I'm going to tell you up front is the most wrong name for your type of brain that we could ever come up with. But they didn't know what they were talking about. So what we know now, and what you just learned about your highways and construction zones, is that it's not actually an attention deficit. It's just harder for you to control the light switch on your attention. You know, like we're trying to build a dimmer switch. I use this metaphor of like your attention is more like a light switch. It's either all the way on or all the way off. And we're trying to build your dimmer so that you can kind of have more control over your attention. So it's not an attention deficit. I mean, when you're building Legos, do you think you have an attention deficit? No, that's crazy. So it's more about attention control. How much control do you have over your attention? And then hyperactivity, that just sounds like, oh, you have no control, but you're such an energetic person. Or sometimes that's not even part of your profile, you know, like, so that's kind of ridiculous. But it's really about like, so instead of hyperactivity, we might say like, super energy, you know, so like, you know, and then disorder, what's really interesting is that they use that word, but that's because, you know, they didn't know enough about ADHD brains to know that there are these, that there are real benefits to having a brain like yours. And there are some times when it is, you know, something that can make it hard, especially when you're in school or, you know, you're trying to get something done and your brain wants to do a million other things. And that can be really hard. I never want to sugarcoat this to say everything's great because life is hard. When you have a different kind of brain, things are hard. And so I want to demystify this word disorder or disability to say that's capturing the part that's so frustrating to you. But what they're missing is that there's another piece to it. And so we want to help you with the part you're going to see this term disability or disorder, because that's notifying everybody like, hey, you need help with this construction project and we're going to help you. But I don't want you to think that you are, you're broken in any way, because that's not true. And that's where they got it wrong.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Liz, just a quick follow-up. How young would you go, or would you consider having these conversations with? Like, would you have these conversations with a kindergartner that you are assessing?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So the youngest that I've had these conversations is a 4-year-old. I have a lot of these conversations with kindergarten, first graders. It's more common that I don't use the official terms when talking to the really young kids. Sometimes I've had a couple autistic 4-year-olds who we have used the term. because that's because in their cases it was actually really important. So everything is you know, kids are unique, but what is really important, and so I there's always a question about what if parents are pushing back, and I think there's a really important piece about respecting the parents' journey in their mm-hmm. understanding and also their instinct about mm-hmm. whether or not we should be using these terms. However, that doesn't mean that we don't start the conversation about highways and construction zones and the tools that you need. So we can talk about kids' neurotype, because that's very broad. Some neurotypes have a name, some don't. That's okay. Sometimes we know the name now, sometimes we're not sure. How many kids get a diagnosis of ADHD just to get them like in the door? Or they have, you know, there's something, but we don't really know what's going on yet. And that's really unsettling. And I don't know that that's healthy to say, like, this is part of your identity, you know, or like, you know, when we have a developing, growing child who we're still learning, I think we would be not serving kids if we pretended we knew that our tests are somehow definitive in that. And so for a lot of times, especially for your very young kids, we're talking about neurodiversity. And for you, this is what neurodiversity means. This is what we learned about your unique brain. Mm-hmm. These are your highways. These are your construction zones. And as they get older, if it becomes more, like we feel more solid in our conceptualization, parents feel more settled and more confident that, okay, this is, you know, kind of part of what's really important to understanding my child, then that conversation evolves. But we're not waiting to start it until they're quote unquote old enough to understand the official mm-hmm. term, because that narrative is starting at 4, probably at 2. If you have children, you know, it starts, you know, like as soon as the first words come out of their mouth, they're starting their narrative about who they are. And so I think we can really inform that by talking about neurodiversity, by talking about different neurotypes, by normalizing differences, and by letting them know it's okay to have a construction project that's tricky. And this is what we're working on with you. And these are your highways. You're not defined by either. You are a very complex, multidimensional person.
And I do love the metaphor that you created with the highways and the construction zones, because that is something that is a tool that you can engage that conversation, start thinking in a way that's very understandable, even for very young kids. And it is so true that we all do have highways and we all do have construction projects. And, you know, sometimes at different periods of your life, different construction projects come up. And that's part of that life's journey. And it ties in beautifully. So I do find it a very useful resource to start the conversation in a way that can be made very accessible to children at a variety of ages and understandings. It's very adaptable. Just a follow up, I'm wondering if there are other resources that you would refer the students to, or some students to, if they're wanting more information or that helps them cope better with discomforting information.
Yeah, so I have been accumulating and storing all of these strategies and resources on my website, which is explainingbrains.com. And if you go there, you'll see that there is a tab for practitioners that has a lot of different resources for having these conversations with kids. There's also a tab for parents. And that's going to have resources that are more parent friendly and parent specific. And there's a blog that has, you know, how to explain ADHD to kids, how to explain dyslexia, autism, behavioral challenges, multiple diagnoses. I just published one on giftedness. So there are just multiple anxiety. I'm not going to get them all. And intellectual disability, how we talk to kids. about all of these different profiles. And with that, there is a really great spreadsheet called Visuals and Videos. And for all these different neurotypes, including just general conversations about neurodiversity and neurodivergence, there are videos and images, books that I love. And it's been a really great resource. I use it for every feedback session. It was part of my planning. I go on there and see like, what am I going to show this family or what am I going to show this child? They're really great ways to show kids that they are not alone and just mm-hmm. help with that explanation. So we're not just talking their ears off about, yeah. you know, on and on. So we can show, not tell. So that's a really great one. And the parent resources, I'm building those out right now. So you'll see more and more of those develop, over the course of this school year.
Thanks, Dr. Liz. We'll be sure to link your website in our show notes so that our audience can have a look for themselves. Dr. Liz, I have a question just about teacher involvement, actually. And I think this is, I'm curious just in terms of how teachers can become a part of this conversation with students regarding their stories. And the reason I ask is because I've had these report out meetings with teachers as well, where we're talking about the students' results. And I think it would be so powerful if the teachers, of course, they know what the results are, but also are in on the language and are in on sort of the framework behind it. Have you had any experiences with those?
Yeah. Oh, I love this question. So, you know, part of the teacher is such an important part of the construction crew, right? And mm-hmm. I think that one of the really powerful things about using the brain building book or just using these strategies in the assessment is that you get a lot of kid language about how they understand what comes easily and what's hard. When we use kids' words, it becomes really, really powerful. I have a child with pretty severe ADHD and, you know, a lot of self-regulation issues. And this is just very recent. He said, you know, like for me, ADHD is I can remember things from 5 years ago, but not 5 minutes ago. And he also talked about like I can juggle one ball really, really well. But if you give me more than one, they're all going to fall. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, that's so good. And so I can talk about working memory and executive function, you know, for forever, but just using his words to say, okay, teachers, at his IEP meeting, this is what I said, can you explain the thing about the juggling? And so one of his teachers at this meeting said, I've never heard you talk so much. You know, but he just went into oh yeah. So here's the thing. And he explained the juggling metaphor that we had come up with. And it just made things resonate for teachers so well because they heard it from him and they're like, okay, and now I get it. And it just encapsulated all the like shifting from one thing to another. They can't talk to him about the homework assignment while he's doing the class assignment. It just became so, just the tendrils of that went so many places. And so I think that's really powerful for teachers. Or they can say like, hey, I need to give you a second ball right now so I can prepare you for what's about to happen. You're going to have two balls. I'm going to be here with you. But, you know, like we got to do a two ball thing right now or I can see what happened. Let's go back. I'm going to take these things off your plate because I want you to have one ball at a time. Right. So now they have a way to talk about that. The way that I do that, for kids where we use the brain building book and they walk away with that workbook, with all their language in it, because we're writing in it the whole time, just sharing that with a teacher, is really, really powerful. But during IEP meetings on explainingbrains.com, one of the practitioner tools is a 4-box assessment summary that is so powerful. It's really simple, but it is so powerful at meetings. So, box 1 is a child's highways. And you just put in bullet points, just, you know, maybe 5 strengths that the child has. Box 2 is the construction projects. So maybe like the top 3 never more construction projects than highways. You got to have the highways be the longer list. But just like the main things that this child's working on. There's a third box for helpful words, and it's helpful words, not diagnosis or eligibility, because sometimes it's like ADHD, but a helpful term is executive functioning or shifting, like for my kid with the juggling. You know, it's like this concept of shifting, cognitive shift, is a really helpful word to know about. So any kind of diagnosis, eligibility, or terms that are really helpful in talking to this kid. And then the tools, which are the recommendations. So again, it's like top five recommendations, not all the recommendations in my report, which I'm still guilty of, you know, two pages of recommendations. So it's kind of pulling out those right now ones, right? Like the top five. And I've really been challenging myself to say, okay, if the parents and teachers are going to do anything, what are those things? And that's what goes on this one page summary. So teachers are getting a bullet point, main things. If you're going to walk away with anything about this child, this is what I want you to walk away with. And I use it to present the results at IEP meetings. Teachers get this. And it's a really handy handout for parents to share with anybody who they don't want to, you know, give all the scores to. And it often will have the child's words on it. So this is a really helpful tool for what you said, James, about really facilitating that conversation with teachers, getting them on the same page. And teachers are busy. And they don't have time to read the report, and, you know, and so it's a really easy way to get everybody using that, those same, you know, really great words and language.
Thank you. I'm feeling very excited by all of this information and wanting to use it all. I'm just wondering if you have any other projects that you are currently exploring or really excited to talk about.
Oh, always. I have so many. I'm staring at my wall of ideas right now, all the different things. I'm hoping to be developing some new tools. As I said, I'm working on the tools for parents, and so some new resources for them. There's a new tab on the explainingbrains.com website that's called Schools. And so I have a colleague who has been taking these resources and really adapting them for the classroom. And so that is building out, and I'm getting reports from her. She's piloting a curriculum based on the brain building book right now that is actually going really well. So I'm really excited to see if we can throw out some of those lesson plans that she's created onto the website. So those are things that are definitely in the hopper. And I'll be doing a few presentations this year, which I'm very excited about, and coming up to see you guys.
That's the perfect segue. Thank you. We are so excited to share that Dr. Liz will be joining us for the BC Association of School Psychologists Conference this year, which will be in Vancouver, November 14th to 16th. And that we would love our listeners to join us there and catch up with Dr. Angoff and some fantastic presenters who are all going to be there and will be sharing wonderful information. And I think I always find it a very inspiring place where I learn so much. So we are very excited about that. And we're very excited to have been able to have this conversation with you today.
Same, same. Thank you.
And that marks the end of this episode. Thanks again for your time and expertise, Dr. Liz. We appreciate you. To our listeners, stay tuned for our next episodes and look to the show notes for resources. You can find us on Apple and Google Podcasts and Spotify. Do rate and review us. And in the meantime, we'd love if you connected with us on our socials at BCASP Certified on Twitter and Instagram and BC Association of School Psychologists on Facebook. Thank you.